This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So, good morning, everyone. Good morning. Put this mask down a bit. So I can return your smiles in this form. And also perhaps you'll be able to hear me better. So welcome everyone, good friends, to Jikoji on this beautiful summer morning. Whenever we come to gather to practice and discuss Buddha Dharma, I always think we're gathering as friends. And that's whether we know each other or not, because actually we are friends, whether we know each other or not. We're all here friends. So we have get settled here a bit. So here we are, this beautiful temple, Zendo, and this beautiful ground, this place, that's a sacred place for those who are looking for a sacred place, curious about sacred places. You've come to the right place. And today I'd like to say a few words about speaking and knowing and not knowing. So is everyone hearing me well in the room? Okay, so and online? Great. Welcome to all online, Kathy, John, Randy, others I don't recognize or have their avatars up. Thank you for joining us online. So speaking and knowing and not knowing. So speech is such a huge and important part of our life as human beings. And I think we could safely say that that for most of us, when we speak, we think we know what we're saying. I mean, we don't speak unless you know, we speak very functional speech to the point, do you know where the water glasses are, things like that. And we either know. But really what comes out of us is in our speech. Sometimes we're not really aware of it. So in a way, we don't know it. And one thing, just sitting and stilling, sitting in this Zazen posture, allows us to be aware of is what words are arising in us and their emotional qualities, as well as their kind of literal meaning. So I'll speak a little bit on this, and I would really like to have a discussion with you all, since this is about speaking and knowing and not knowing. And just as we're all friends, I think we're all in some way in that place of both knowing and not knowing. And that includes me, who's up here speaking right now. But you all can speak too, and you all know, and you all don't know, in a kind of a Zen phrase. We know and we don't know. So when we have a discussion or a dialogue, this is actually speaking from really where we are in this moment. So that's what's coming up from us, what we know right now, or what we don't know. And what we're saying or what any of us has to say, it doesn't necessarily add to wisdom, or it doesn't add to the words of the Buddha Dharma way. And it also doesn't take away anything. So it does add in a way. But most simply, it's just our expression of what's true and real for us now in this moment together in this place. So I think when we say hello and greet each other in the Zendo, or when we have a discussion, or when anyone speaks, actually, it's like we're saying hello in that Zulu way. Mm-hmm. I'm here to be seen. I don't know the expression in Zulu, but the greeting is literally means walk up in that culture. You say literal words, I'm here to be seen. And then the way of responding is, I see you. I'm also here to be seen. And then there's the final polite response, I see you. So we're really seeing each other when we speak in a sacred place. We're allowing ourselves to be seen, and we're also seeing others. We see each other and we recognize we're all in the same boat. We're all rowing toward this place, our deep wish, actually, our deep wish and places where we live with others and with ourselves in peace and in harmony and with kindness and with consideration, care. So that's anytime we speak, also this transfers over from in here to out there. And you may have noticed that even when you're meditating and facing the wall, we're also saying hello to ourselves and to the whole world. Everything is always here. So I think one of the great gifts of the Buddha way is that it recognizes that speaking doesn't mean passing on knowledge or knowing in the way of passing on factual knowledge. And at the same time, so the Buddhist teachings recognize that speaking isn't necessarily about passing on knowledge. And at the same time that speaking and listening do pass on a kind of knowing that's beyond language, the beyond language part. And that's prajna, we call that, this deeper knowing from our whole nature, which is our human nature and our Buddha nature at the same time. It's intuitive insight, that's one definition that we have in words, language, for prajna, or non-discriminative wisdom. In other words, wisdom that doesn't judge, but sees how things actually are in this moment clearly. And this is always with us, but it's so simple it eludes us. We find it easy to forget. We have a very active cognitive part of the mind, and that's part of our evolution, part of our nature. So and it stood us in good stead for millions of years. So that's how we got here. But it's not the only part. So Zazen, sitting, that's our fundamental practice, to open to our whole body and mind and heart. And the opening to be with whatever is that prajna wisdom. However, we don't sit, we stand and we walk, we lie down, as indicated in the sutra we chanted today, the Metta Sutta, acknowledged there. We're active, we're out in the world, we're living, we're sleeping, we're going to work, we're taking care of family, we're taking care of many things in our individual life situations. But in all these situations, whether we're speaking aloud to someone or thoughts in our minds, all of these, both in here and out in the world, that's not this, inform the choices we make for our lives. So because of the way we're built, I think that with this autonomic kind of system that keeps us rolling along, that we identify as our own with our all of our functions of body, the heart, and also the mind, that we've learned a lot of things and we get in our groove and we function in the world. And that all happens very quickly and rapidly, and that's just the way we are. So that has some consequences, though. And in a culture like ours, which is very emphasizes the worldly and not leaving much time for reflection, meditation, cultivating care and kindness, cultivating what it means to speak with care and kindness, then this culture tends to get us confused about like what are the choices in front of me? How to make choices in this constantly changing, always busy world? And really the fundamental choices, not the material choices about anything, where to go, although this prajna wisdom can be also helpful in making kind of life choices too. But we need to tune into it. That's why we sit down and integrate ourselves, come together, whole body, mind, spirit, heart. So we're confused as to who is making the choices too. We think it's me, but then there's a further question of who is me, made up of all these parts and thoughts and patterns and habits. And then we're always changing. We can see that really easily just by looking around and looking in the mirror and seeing what's happening in our life. So, but we do recognize this when we come to sit quietly, we get a glimpse of what's under the confusion, the real, a clear, maybe momentary, usually momentary at the beginning, particularly a sense of, oh, this is really just simple. It's just what is happening right now. Breathing, bird singing, hearing the sound of the car, the mosquito, the sound of the mosquito, sensing our body, our foot falling asleep. This is what happens all the time in our life. But we tend to get caught up in our heads and thoughts, and those can just spin out. So it's really good to come together and take a little time to reacquaint ourselves with these glimpses. Because we need a few of them. It's good to have them continue on of this way, which is called beyond words by the ancient Chan teacher Sengsan in his poem. Verses on the faced mind or verses on the trusting mind. Words can also be a portal to this deeper understanding of how to be, how we are, who we are in this world. And even a lot of words, Sen Sang's poem that ends with words, the way is beyond words, is really a long poem. So it's not that we can't say a lot. So I'm very encouraged by Shakyamuni Buddha, the founder of this practice that we do, the original founder in this historical period. I'm really encouraged that he overcame his confusion and he spoke. There's quite a story about how he was really confused whether he should speak at all and whether that would be, whether anyone would listen, whether anyone would hear, whether. But he overcame that by sitting a lot through it. And ever since he did that, teaching stories and practices have kept this Buddha way alive for millennia. And my sense from the early stories of Buddha, in the very early texts, that Shakyamuni Buddha spoke from a place of sharing rather than a place of passing on wisdom. He spoke with many people in the 45 years that he wandered northern India. And he learned from the people he spoke with. In those teaching stories, people ask him questions and he reflects and he learns from them. And he listened so that he could say, that he could offer what he knew from his own experience could be useful to that person he was listening to. And sometimes he refused to speak. I was looking at the online group and I saw a message on this computer, which I'm not sure is important, but maybe the message is, this Mac cannot connect to iCloud because of a problem with your address.
I think it's just trying to share with you, but you can make it go away with the cancel okay. button.
Thank you. I have it later. Thank you.
Does that help?
Kind of covers up people otherwise. So these stories have been really kind of the lifeblood of this practice, because we're just humans and we're sharing. And some have more experience, and they have more experience of certain things than others. But all of our experience is basically the same. And that's, in a way, the promise of Shakyamuni Buddha. That's what he always encouraged people, like, I'm just awake. We can all wake up. That's what all these practices are about. Waking up, being aware, being mindful. So, and Zen koans are a particular story form. They're short and paradoxical, and they're often have humor. They're often funny. So in paradox in language particularly can cut through confusion, because our tendency is to hold on to the words, hold on to the language and think, oh, I understand. Now I got it. And sometimes we do, but we don't always understand in that way that the words even come to us, oh, I understand. We just do understand. So the paradoxes are a way of bringing different people's attention to that and cutting through confusion that we're all subject to from time to time, if not living in that. So the literal translation of koan from Japanese is a matter for public thought. And that to me points to the sharing quality of speaking, sharing these stories. Stories are very basic to human beings. So, and Dogen, the founder of this particular form, Soto Zen, 13th century Japanese teacher who went to China and learned from many Chinese teachers, he gave many talks, wrote many words, wrote many teaching stories, wrote poems. So it's not that words are a problem at all. Words can also be a gateway to this understanding that's extra, beyond extra word, extra lingual, beyond the language, a very deep understanding. So I'd like to read a short koan. These koans are usually in the form of a dialogue, so there are two people speaking. And often one is a person who has some experience and insight, who's the head of a temple or has practiced a long time, but not always. Some are just encounters between people who are practicing or even strangers. So here too, many words are added to these brief dialogues. There are commentaries and multiple commentaries and poems and multiple poems. But I'll just read a short one. That's a dialogue between Fan Yan and Zizang. And then I'll read a bit of the commentary. Zizang asked Fan Yan, "Where are you going?" Fan Yan said, "Around on pilgrimage." Zizang said, "What is the purpose of pilgrimage?" Fan Yan said, "I don't know." Zizang said, "Not knowing is most intimate." This koan is from the Book of Serenity. It's a collection of these. And it's not knowing is most intimate is a very famous line of in Zen of the end of a koan. And it's sometimes translated as nearest. Not knowing is nearest or closest. So speaking, knowing, and not knowing. How do these all come together? And from the commentary, another Chinese teacher, Nan Quan, said, "The way is not in knowing or in not knowing. Knowing is false consciousness. Not knowing is indifference." Now, when people hear it said that not knowing is nearest, and that this is where Fayan was enlightened, they immediately go over to just not knowing without understanding just this is it. They hardly realize that a phrase of the ancients covers everywhere, like the sky, supports everywhere, like the earth. So I thank you very much for your attention, and I invite you to join the discussion online and in here.
Paul? I was putting my mask on, but hello. Okay. I am always close to you, Karen.
Ready?
between nine.
Hogan.
Thank you, Carolyn. Wonderful to hear the collection of things that you bring to us today. Things that really caught my ear that I'd like to explore a bit more. I love the idea of speaking being about sharing, speaking from a place of sharing rather than from a place of passing on knowledge. It seemed very important to connecting with the other being, as beings that are with you in a particular moment. That reminds me, that sharing aspect. Now, before that, in speaking or in knowledge, it seems like there's an aspirational aspect to both knowing and not knowing. There's this aspirational aspect to those things, not just the practical aspect of what am I going to say and what effect am I trying to achieve, but sort of aspirational intention that goes into our efforts to either be seen by others, or sometimes we are attempting to pass knowledge. But I like that. The sharing seems come first, you know, the being near first, the not knowing being near is important. When you mentioned one of those last stories of there was a caution from the writer who said that upon hearing that not knowing is nearest or most intimate, people rush that way. And I had this immediate image of a boat, and how if everyone rushes to one side of the boat, or if too much of something rushes to one side, the boat lists out of equilibrium. And and also just finally, I guess, in terms of being near, your very clear, concise thought of what is true and real for us now. And the us is important. First get near so that there is an us, and then feel into what is near and true, what is real and true. Aspirational aspect of that. I'm curious if that brings anything up for you.
Thank you, Hogan. I love that image of the boat. You know, rushing to one side of the boat, that really makes it very a body sense. Mm. We can really feel that, you know. But and I think that is what Nam Quan was pointing to, that it's either or for us. We don't find it easy to stay in the middle, but the practice we're doing is called the middle way. So that's our aspiration, partly, to stay in the middle. But I think aspiration might come into this also in the sense that when you're just with what is near and simple, then that's it's hard to be reifying yourself. It's hard to be putting yourself as a separate ego identity. And also with the sharing, it's not, because of course, it's when you're sharing, you're not thinking about what you look like when you're saying something, or when you're really sharing from the heart what's true and real right now. And that doesn't mean a flowery heart, like it has to be a big heart confession or something like that. It just means just being really real, what you're saying about So that whole huge piece of not self. So how can we be us? Who are we? Who is me? This self, and yet at the same time, this not self. I think the aspiration comes in there. Thank you. Karen?
So on the subject of like knowing and not knowing, and if the subject is ourselves, which is like knowing or not knowing ourselves, and we heard in the talk that like who are we really, and there's like various parts to ourselves, there's these thoughts and feelings. And so like in our practice, when we come across a part of ourselves that seems to exist, but we don't know what it is. Like if I were to describe you, it seems like a black big rock, which is always there. Or in a way of like Buddhist terminology, it could be called as maybe it is a hindrance. And so in that knowing and not knowing, something we come across within ourselves, how do we relate to it? And constantly it seems like just not, you seem to not able to know what it is. How do you relate to that?
Thank you, Karen. That's a very good question. How do we relate to knowing that something's there, but we're not really able to know it?
Yes.
So one way to do that is just to accept that it's there and we don't know it, accept it and not, or the best we can, just accept that it's there and let it go. Sometimes thoughts or sensations, and sometimes these in-between states, which we don't even really quite have language for, that's both the mind and the body, that these kind of places that we do know are real. But then we tend to get caught up in trying to analyze them or figure them out. And so I say this one way because each of us finds our own way, actually. And then of course the classic answer is just keep sitting, not focusing on this as much as one can, let that go. So some patience or some saying, it's just something I don't know. There are a lot of things we don't know. When it's very intimate like that, it can be troubling to us, but then we can also just know that. Thoughts or any kind of knowledge that we have that causes a question in our mind, they're just waves. They're just waves in the ocean of our life, of this life and everything that makes up this life around us. And sometimes the waves are very smooth and easy, and sometimes they're stormy, and sometimes they're huge. So it's just being at ease with that. Thank you. Yes.
You mentioned at one point that the Buddha had taken extended periods of silence in order to decide how to speak and perhaps what to share. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the role of silence in speaking.
Thank you very much. There are many specific practices about speaking in Buddhism, actually. But the And the role of silence is huge, actually. And the role is, that's what our practice is, coming together and sitting in silence, because that's where we get these glimpses of prajna. That's where we actually begin to know ourselves and trust ourselves most deeply. So also bringing in what Karin said about ourself and how there are many parts to ourselves. It's not to say we let ourselves go. In fact, what happens is we know ourselves more deeply and we trust ourselves more deeply to speak when we need to and what we say. And the more, for many people, most people, certainly Shakyamuni Buddha talked about it a lot, sitting in silence is a way into knowing how to speak and what to speak and when to speak. And to speak without premeditation or thinking ahead, just to speak what's arising. Silence is also part of speaking in that it cultivates this dialogue, because when we really are silent, when we listen to someone, we can really hear what they're saying. And we practice doing that in order to really hear what others are saying, as well as to really hear what we're telling ourselves, because we tell ourselves a lot of stories, and some stories are true stories and some stories are real stories, and some stories are just confused.
Could you please read the end of that koan again, something about not knowing the words of the ancients, not knowing Kabir's entire heaven and earth or something. I don't remember. Could you read it and say
something
about it? That end of that koan.
Yeah, it's actually just not really the end. It's one of the commentaries. Okay. Because words. Nanquan said, the way is not in knowing or in not knowing. Knowing is false consciousness. Not knowing is indifference. Now, when people hear it said that not knowing is nearest, and that this is where Feyan was enlightened, they immediately go over to just not knowing, without understanding. Just this is it. They hardly realize that a phrase of the ancients covers everywhere, like the sky, supports everywhere, like the earth. So, to put a little gloss on that, or commentary on the commentary from this person who's sitting right here right now. That's the tendency of our mind to always go one way or the other, the boat. Like we're confused, so we just keep going one to the other. This is the answer, this is the answer. This is the answer. I need to know the answer. And when people hear it said that not knowing is nearest, and that this is where Feyan was enlightened, they immediately go over to not knowing. Oh, I want that. Just that word, which is enlightenment, is a very, that's a secondary or tertiary language addition to the words that are used in Buddhism. It's an English word, came much later in translation. It's awake, aware. And so enlightened already sounds like that's some place to get to. No, that's some place so that's why we rush over there, according to Nanquan. Yes, people want to go over there because, yes, then I've landed on a place and I've got it. But just this is it. just the words of where are you going around on pilgrimage? What's the purpose of pilgrimage? I don't know. Not knowing is nearest. Just this. And then a phrase, when we really hear a phrase that has been repeated by, he says, the ancients, Shakyamuni Buddha, for example, we hear a lot of phrases of his in this practice. But we don't understand or hardly realize, he says, that these, just for example, Shakyamuni Buddha, I am awake, I'm just awake, that these phrases cover everything. Like the sky is everywhere, like the earth supports everywhere. So it's just this, it's simply just this. When we have kind of let go of that part of our discursive mind that always wants to make these distinctions, when we've just let it be at ease, we don't even have to let go, we just don't have to turn there. So thank you very much.
Carol, when you were speaking this end of this, my mind flashed to a story about Colin Comuncino I read last night. Somebody said that he was complete. So maybe this end is something that what he said is that those of the ancients are complete. Justice is complete. Complete covers everything. Complete covers everything. You said it this way this time, I had this.
Thank you. Okay.
You referred to Shakyamuni Buddha's saying, I'm awake. Isn't there something more to that phrase, that exclamation in the morning? I'm remembering that it's, I'm awake with all beings, that there's this deep sharing aspect. Awakeness is fundamentally when we're near, when we're truly near everything else, and not just in our own little shell, our own little designs, our own little stories and conditioning. Am I remembering that
thank you for bringing that in. That's wonderful to bring that in, because whenever you talk about the ancients, which is what we get up and talk about when we sit up here, all the phrases, there are many different iterations and many different stories. And so that is a very important one, awake with all beings. But, and he also said, you know, and as people would ask him, what is your secret? What are you, why do you attract so many people, or whatever it was, or I see you. So when somebody actually saw him on the road or something, or in a town, I see you. What is it? What have you done? What are you studying? He would just go, I'm awake. I've just woken up. And then, of course, then he would give whole talks.
And it occurs to me that quite likely what people were seeing in this being was a being that could see them very clearly in this moment, and that resonated very deeply. It's like, oh my God, this person really is awake to me right now, or to this moment. And that's the nearness.
That's the nearest. Thank you. Randy.
Hi, Carolyn. I think this ties in a little bit, and it was, I think you brought up the word choices somewhere at the beginning. I heard it anyway, and choices. It's been a thing of crossing my mind a lot, the choices that I make and do and whatnot. And it brought me back to this film I recently saw. It's a French film called Petite Maman. And it had a wonderful, to me, it was a great Dharma insight. But in the movie, this young girl returns to the past at the same age that her mother was, in a very similar place. And they become friends. And all of a sudden, the young girl realizes that this is her mother in the past. And so she tells him, I hate to say this to you, you won't understand, but you're my mother. And then the mother said to the other girl, so two girls the same age, she says, you must be from the future. And the little girl said, no, I'm on the path following you. And so that little phrase, I'm on the path following you, when I heard that, it sort of has helped me frame all the things that I do. That we're creating a path for the future as we move through time and space. And it was, and I think it's more so, it's kind of hitting me because my daughter has been here about the last month. She returned from graduate school, about ready to move on. But it made me think of the choices that I make. And then this has a lot to do with the, and that thing can spread out a lot of ways, all the way to, climate change and whatever. But on a very personal level, it's there. So, so that's somehow this choices thing connected up to what you're talking about. Anyway, thanks.
Thank you very much, Randy. Truly, as you say, we're the choices for the future and for the present moment. For each choice conditions the future, and it also is alive in the present moment. So that's beautiful. Le petit maman. Thank you. Yes.
A French film, and it's very slow pace. It has this wonderful kind of sequencing to it.
Yeah. We have someone else I'd like to speak. I don't see your name.
Oh, hi, Caroline. This is Shula. Can you hear me?
Shula, yes. Thank you.
Hi. Yes. So your conversation with Hogan just remind me of a story I read about a counselor. She was talking about not the different levels of the master of counseling was, she mentioned her teacher's teacher compared to her teacher, that the differences was when the client or patient seeing her teacher, they have very desire to share their pains. But when they see their teacher's teacher, this sense of tranquility just make them realize that they have nothing they needed to say more. So this idea, and you mentioned in Shakyamuni Buddha, why people, when they see him, they wanted to follow him. I wonder if that is also when they see him, as you mentioned earlier, they also see themselves. It's this deeply seeing, it just immediately being recognized and shared. It doesn't have to go beyond the word. Go beyond the words that you just get it. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you so much. Beautiful way to finish our discussion.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.